Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
Bandits! Hundreds of them! 6 o'clock!
It's got German markings.
Let's get them!
Where are the damn fighters going?
Is there anything left of our escort?
Mayday! Mayday! Prepare to bail out!
We have a right to fight for our country, the same as every other American.
From the last plane, to the last bullet, to the last minute, to the last man, we fight!
We fight!
We fight!
We fight!
You are listening to sound from the new hit movie Red Tails, a dramatic retelling of the legendary Tuskegee Airmen, 450 fighter pilots in the 332nd Fighter Group who integrated the skies in World War II and helped lead the Allies to victory. But what was the real story, and what were the real obstacles that these brave men had to face, not only in the skies, but on the ground when they returned to a segregated America after the war? I'm Glenn Moberg. Today on Route 51, we are very lucky to have two of these legendary fighting men with us today, 92-year-old Dr. Welton Taylor and 91-year-old Virgil Poole, both of whom are in North Central Wisconsin telling their stories to veterans, to patriots, and especially to young people at an appearance last night at Edgar High School and at another tonight at 7:30 p.m. at the American Legion in Wausau. Dr. Welton Taylor served as a liaison pilot in the Southwest Pacific area during World War II in the Solomon Islands, New Guinea, and the Philippines. He survived a crash landing behind enemy lines, leading his observer to safety despite suffering serious injuries to both knees. After the war, Dr. Taylor returned to the University of Illinois, where he was a pioneer in the field of microbiology, discovering that common antibiotics could cure gas gangrene and tetanus, which were dangerous conditions that often affected war victims. Mr. Virgil Poole served in the 99th Pursuit Squadron in the Mediterranean Theater of Operations. He was a chief intelligence specialist in the United States Air Force during the war, and he also served in the Allied Air Force's public relations staff. Late in life, when he was in his 80s, he worked in the Cook County, Illinois morgue, hired by the county medical examiner to investigate deaths. Both Mr. Poole and Dr. Taylor are natives of Chicago, but before we introduce them, we're going to play a short clip of their presentations at the Edgar High School Auditorium last night. First, we will be listening to Dr. Welton Taylor and then Mr. Virgil Poole.
You know, the Air Force was never all that gung-ho on separation. They just weren't built that way. Some stupid guy in the Air Force said the best job is done by the best man in the position that he fits best. And that's what's good for the country. Put the right man in the right spot and turn him loose. Well, segregation does not permit that, because there's no white man that is not superior to any black man under any circumstances, anywhere, anyhow. So that was the way that segregation was run in 1941. And it stayed that way throughout the war, because the rule was, don't make any black heroes. What's going to happen when they go back to Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia? They're going to be troublemakers.
We must be qualified first. That's more primary than accomplishment. And that if we qualify ourselves for whatever our hope and dream was, then success is inevitable. And I think that's what occurred here. I found out what I had to do. I had educated myself into psychology, sociology, and I spent my 3 years over there attempting to get them to understand we are a group, we are together, we have a common purpose. We want to prove to the world that God didn't create us unequal from any other human on the earth, that we were the same. And just give us an opportunity and afford us the opportunity to qualify, you'll never be disappointed in our accomplishments. God bless you and goodbye.
Mr. Virgil Poole and Dr. Welton Taylor, our two guests today on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. First, a big thanks to Edgar High School teacher Colin Hansen for bringing Welton Taylor and Virgil Poole to North Central Wisconsin. And a reminder to our listeners, If you've got a question for the Tuskegee Airmen or a comment on that very important part of our history as Americans, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. We'd love to hear from you, and this is going to be a rare opportunity for you to talk in person to one of these heroic men who are with us for the next hour on Route 51. Gentlemen, first of all, what do you think of the movie Red Tails? Was it accurate in its portrayal of the 332nd Fighter Group?
Yes.
Yes.
And how do you think the movie could have been better?
Oh, it'd be three times as long.
You know, there's a lot of action in that movie, a lot of planes going down and planes being shot down and things blowing up. Was it really like that during World War II for the two of you?
We can't say that because neither of us was in those dogfights, but we say that there were something like 31 people from the Tuskegee Airmen that testified as to the accuracy, and they were satisfied. You have to remember, this is a movie. It's supposed to attract people. There was 93, depending on who you see, or $96 million out of the pocket of George Lucas, who wanted to make this movie for 20 years.
And the movie theaters, the producers, rather, the big production houses kept turning him down.
Yes, he was turned down by 7 out of 8. And the 8th one took it because they used his money.
So why do you think that was? Why the hesitancy to tell the story of the Tuskegee Airmen even now, 60 years after the war?
Well, we feel that the story was about black people. It was designed to educate, and for that reason, white producers didn't feel that it was going to play to white audiences. And if you didn't play to large audiences, you're not going to make any money. And making money is what Hollywood is all about. It's a business, and you're not in business to satisfy people except if you can get them to pay. They're no people. They're only customers.
Virgil Poole, do you share that assessment?
Very much so. I think the basic elements here that are so important are that the opportunity had been neglected in affording a black man the opportunity to qualify for those things they contend he could not do or wasn't qualified for. And once that door was opened, even so far as the presidency, it's going to make more people conscious of the truth in the belief that we all had that we can fight and we can win and we can fly. And I think its proof is within itself. And by interviewing the pilots myself after flight, I became as enthused as they, as if I was participating in an actual accident.
How did you interview the pilots?
It's the category that it's relative. You brief them prior to in the preparation of the flight with explanation of gratitude and terrain, mm-hmm. Where flak was and that. Then after the flight on completion, they come back for interrogation.
So that's something that you did when you were stationed in the Mediterranean.
I did in every squadron except the 99th and then the 100th. I did the 301st, 302nd, and I was there for... Finally, I was moved into the position as being the Chief Operations Intelligence Specialist.
Now, Virgil, you're 91, and Dr. Taylor, you're 92, and it's taken a long time for the Tuskegee Airmen to get the recognition that they've deserved. Do you feel good that it's finally happening?
Well, it happened a little earlier because both of us are wearing the Congressional Gold Medal, which was given to us in 2007. And this was given to over 300 of us. And we had over 600 people in Congress. We were the largest group of people ever to sit in the Congress of the United States. And so we have to say that we've had some recognition. now. They're trying to do this for the wax and the wasps and the buffalo soldiers, of which I am one also, second generation.
Explain that to me.
Well, in 1866, after the end of the Civil War, all Americans, black Americans, had been conscripts. That is, they were drafted or allowed to enter and worked in menial positions for the most part until they got groups together to be fighting men on both sides of the flag. And when the war was over, bye. Get out of the uniform. If you're here 24 hours later, you will be shot as a trespasser. And nobody went into the regular army. Only whites.
So Welton Taylor, you're telling me that your father served in that position? You said you're second generation?
My uncle was a Buffalo soldier in the 10th Cavalry. He rode up the hill and helped to defeat the Spaniards at the top of the hill at San Juan. And that was the same hill that President, who wasn't president at that time, Theodore Roosevelt rode
right.
up.
Well, I think Teddy Roosevelt went up the hill. I think was McKinley the president at that time?
Yes.
Let's go back in time. You know, in your remarks last night at Edgar High School, you talk about the challenge of trying to fly during a segregated America when people of color were not allowed in the skies. Take us back to that time and tell us what it was like. Virgil, why don't you start?
Well, I think I'm less prepared in that particular area than Major is, but I was an individual who was a child of educated black parents. My father was dean of Arkansas State Baptist College. My mother was a teacher at Tuskegee. They both came to Chicago when I was 10 days old and brought me with them. And they were segregated due to the North Central Association's regulations as to failure to recognize the quality of anybody under that system. So I had to kind of concentrate on self, because in my era, the segregation was a poor thing, but it was prominent in prejudice. I was in school, for example, in high school. I was in a segregated school, not segregated, but where the percentage was about 15 to 85, white over black. And we weren't permitted to swim in the pool because it contained grease in our hair, clogged the drain.
And that was in Chicago.
In Chicago, right. So I kind of was a bit removed from what was really being conducted in the area that you asked about.
But you experienced a segregated America, even in a northern city, and a lot of people have the impression that it wasn't a problem in the northern cities.
It was, you know, it's unbelievable. The prejudices really manifested. And we all have prejudices. It isn't regulated to Caucasian. It's a common element within the lives of anybody. We deny prejudice, but we have it, and we exercise it in accordance with our intellect, I think. And I
think some people work to get over it, and some people don't.
That's, I think it is. It's accepted because it's a way of life. And we have to revolutionize in the movement is about the world today. And an equality of no concentration on equality, but a concentration on opportunity to succeed.
Dr. Taylor, your impressions of that time. You were quoted in the Wausau Daily Herald today saying that the Army was basically run like the Ku Klux Klan. Was that quote accurate?
Amen.
And you stand by it?
Yes. You think that they're precepts were exactly those of the Klan, because you have to understand, in the South, a man can have a father who owns thousands of acres and has hundreds of slaves or hundreds of workers after slavery. But there's no glory for the youngster. How do you get ahead in life? You say, well, my father's very rich. What does that do for you? So the way that the Southerners have brought up their kids is that we said in the North, there were three things that were great for the kid. He belonged to his father's corporation, and it was a multinational corporation. He was in the railroad business as one of the owners, or he was like Rockefeller. He was in oil and gas business, like the Bushes. And those were the top of things. But in the South, there were only three. You were a general, or you were a general. So what do we got? We've got all of these wonderful institutions in the South that are military institutions. When the Civil War
And you're out, saying they were run like the Ku Klux Klan.
When the Civil War broke out, what happened to Robert E. Lee, who was the president of West Point? And he was asked by Lincoln to take over the Union Army. And his famous words, "I shall not turn my back on the South." And he went south and took 79% of West Point cadets with him. They formed the backbone of the Confederate Army. And the leftovers, well, we know how many times we lost wars, lost battles at the beginning.
And you're saying that history that took place during and immediately after the Civil War was still with us when you were serving in Tuskegee.
My opening of lines of my book is, don't you hate it when you're fighting one war and another one breaks in to interrupt you? I have been fighting the Civil War all my life, and I still am. That's why I'm here, because we have not reached a place where we are not under the impact. Right now, we have over 1,000 organizations in the United States, some in this state, a lot more in other states, that are still sold on Hitler. And we know what Hitler would have done to us. And when they asked Joe Lewis way back in the war, they said, Joe Lewis, why do you fight? Why do you feel like you do about your country and everything? He was only a corporal at that time. And he said, because there's nothing about my problems that Hitler can solve.
It's Dr. Welton Taylor and Virgil Poole, 92 years old and 91 years old, respectively, two of the original legendary Tuskegee Airmen. They are with us today on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio for the next hour. If you would like to call in and talk to these extraordinary gentlemen, or if you've got a comment on the way they read American history, we want to hear from you. 1-800-780-9742. Our lines are wide open right now. You can get right through. 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrick. This is Route 51 on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, working to build the local economy and strengthen the community by making local business everybody's business. Learn more about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
I'm Glenn Mobrick. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, and we have two of the original, legendary, and surviving Tuskegee Airmen with us, 92-year-old Dr. Welton Taylor and 91-year-old Virgil Poole, 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to talk to these extraordinary gentlemen, or if you have a question that you'd like to ask them about this very important part of American history. Dr. Taylor, we understand that you already had 4 years of college under your belt and 2 years in the ROTC when you enlisted in 1939. And I think you kind of touched on that before the break, but why did you, Virgil Poole, want to put your lives on the line as fighters for an America that treated you as second-class citizens, as people who were inferior to the white politicians who were in power, and even inferior to the white soldiers, seamen, and airmen who were fighting the same cause that you were fighting for? Why did you want to do it?
Well, I wanted to do it for the simple reason that I knew that we were going to be in a war that involved us, and I did not intend to go into that war as a private. I wanted to take advantage of the fact that I had a college education, that I had the opportunity that I had to fight for to become an officer, because they were going to draft thousands of black men, and they would have no black officers, and therefore no protection for those men. And I intended to use my skills to be one that would be a buffer between them and the kind of segregation I knew was going to follow, because I lived under it.
And Virgil Poole, you were drafted. You got out of college in 1942. How do you feel?
41.
41. How do you feel when that draft notice came?
Well, my neighbors made it a point to get me drafted because I was working as an office service section leader for the OPA. And I didn't have any notion that I was going to be drafted. But when I got drafted and I saw what was occurring to a draftee, and no exposure for me to exercise my knowledge and all I'd gone through. I worked in steel mill and worked in so many odd jobs to get through school that I couldn't consider myself having to march around in the mud and work with no use for me whatever. So I was invited into the orderly room, and I was told to sign Uncle Sam on a board that says Uncle Sam wants you, and at the bottom it says Negroes are being afforded flight training at Tuskegee. And I said, that's for me. I never been airplane in my life at that time, but it didn't take too long before I got to Tuskegee. And when I got there, I became aware of what the situation actually was, and I swore to all that was holy that I was going to be a part to defeat all the misnomers and lies and reasons why there could no be no success, when I know that it had to be almost an insane thought to think that God created people so unequal they couldn't be qualified, because I don't believe there's a difference in God's creation of a human being. I think we're all the same.
Dr. Taylor, we've got about 20 seconds here to the break. Could you add to that?
Well, yes, he had the idea completely right. This Tuskegee was set up as an experiment, and that's what they called it. And that Tuskegee experiment was just as wrong as the experiment that they did at Tuskegee with syphilis, by not treating the men that they gave syphilis to. And so this was just an early forerunner of it, because things just didn't change that much.
Dr. Welton Taylor and Mr. Virgil Poole, two of the original Tuskegee Airmen. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We'll be back with much, much more after this break for news. I'm Glenn Mobrig. We're back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio with a very special show and two very special guests, two of the original surviving legendary Tuskegee Airmen who helped integrate the air in their fighter planes during World War II, only to come back to a segregated America in the years after the war. 92-year-old Dr. Welton Taylor and 91-year-old Mr. Virgil Poole with us for the next half hour. We'd like to hear from you. 1-800-780-9742. If you've got questions about this period in history, or you'd like to talk to these extraordinary men. Dr. Taylor, in the first section of the program, you said the Army was basically run like the Ku Klux Klan, that it was based on white supremacy. You're not backing down from that. How high up in the ranks do you think that went? Did it go all the way to General Douglas MacArthur in the Pacific and General Dwight David Eisenhower in the European theater?
It is my impression that a lot of this started at the top. I know General of the Third Army, George Patton, requisitioned and got soldiers from the Camp Hood, Texas, for his tankers. And when he got the last three battalions out of there, one that was considered to be very good, and he said, send them right now to England. I will have them picked up. And he brought them down, and this has been much quoted. He said, I want you to know that as long as you kill those so-and-so-and-so-and-so's, and you do what I want you to do, you are going to be my men. and don't let me down, and don't let your race down. Those were Patton's words.
But
that was not popular with his commanding officer, who was General Eisenhower, and who had some problems with race.
Well, Eisenhower, sent in the troops to integrate the schools in Little Rock. Do you think he grew at all as president? And
well, it's a different situation.
His
yes, he did. He did. And one of the reasons that he had to grow at all is because he followed Harry S. Truman. And Harry S. Truman was a man with brass. And you know that that he did things that no one else has done. He wrote just one note that said, you will, as of this date, integrate all units without regard to race, color, or national origin. And he did that on the 27th of July of 1948.
Virgil Poole, how did you feel when Harry Truman made that executive order?
I thought it was a long-awaited thing. I felt within my heart, though, it was inevitable that the world was changing at that time. And all he did was, I think, administered his judgment to the movement that was around him. Because people had begun to understand that these are not animals. There's no connection between evolution and these people, and we might as well wake up and give them what they got coming.
Do you think your service as a fighter in the Tuskegee Airmen, the service of all of those 450 individuals, do you think that helped pave the way and get us over that unfortunate period in American history?
I think it was very, very instrumental in happening because it showed a togetherness that was not commonly known to those who were in position to prevent it from being. The attitude and spirit from every individual in the 332nd Fighter Group was that, yeah, we can do it. Just get out of the way and let us do it. And that's what happened. Eleanor came with the airplanes. We went over there and erased all the air, Anzio Annie, all the things that were troublesome. They almost wiped out the Japanese 442nd unit in Italy. But we destroyed the gun. We dropped bombs down the stack of destroyers. A lot of things we did. But we did them to win the war and prove to people that, hey, we were a fighting instrument. And we're going to keep on at it until you understand us. And that's one of the principal reasons why I voluntarily present myself to the world. I worked, slaved, and soldiered for the greatest nation in the world. See, the medals don't mean near as much to me as the privilege to manifest the truth in my heart about how I feel. And that's the way I feel about it, and I'll go to heaven the same way.
1-800-780-9742. Let's go to the phones right now. Kathy in Catawba, you're on Route 51 with Welton Taylor and Virgil Poole. Hello, Kathy.
Hi. It's just wonderful to hear these courageous and brave men. I really am enjoying your program. I first heard about the movie Red Tails from my daughter. She was out in Washington, D.C. in November and had gone to the Smithsonian Institute and met a man named George Norfleet, who wrote a book called The Pilot's Journeys, Memories of a Tuskegee Airman, Curtis Christopher Robinson. And so she bought a copy of the book, and she was talking to the author, and he told her about the movie Red Tails. And so she did some research on it, and then we saw George Lucas on television talking about it, and he talked just about, he found out exactly the same thing that these two veterans are talking about, how they were treated when they got back to the United States. And he said someday he'd like to make a move of kind of a sequel movie about that, too. And then we did some further checking and found out that on HBO a couple of years ago, they had another wonderful movie about the Tuskegee Airmen. So it's possible with a little research to find out more about this kind of neglected part of history. And it's my understanding that the Tuskegee Airmen were the only group of fighter pilots in the United States in the Second World War that didn't lose a plane.
Is that true?
Well, that's been debated. They waited 60-some years to debate whether that statement was right or not. But it was never made by the Tuskegee Airmen in the first place. We never said that no plane had ever been lost as a bomber. And the latest thing that's out, and you can get it right on your Kindle, is a story about the myth of the no bombers lost. And that author says that after voluminous searching, it seems that maybe 5 bombers were lost. Now, this is a negligible. This is a, 0 plus 5. And if it's right or wrong, what difference does it make? The idea was nobody ever took care of the bombers like the Tuskegee Airmen did. And you have to stop and think about what happened to the 8th Air Force flying out of London area. They lost so many men that on the radio just a couple of weeks ago, they mentioned that 8th lost more men than the Japanese killed of all of the Marines, et cetera, in the South Pacific.
Kathy, thank you so much for the phone call.
Oh, thank you.
And let's go to Ellen now in Park Falls. Ellen, you're on Route 51 with Dr. Welton Taylor and Mr. Virgil Poole. Hello, Ellen.
Hi.
Oh, it's Eileen.
I think it's kind of interesting that we just had a program talking about heroes and they were talking about an athlete. And to me, people like the gentleman, the Tuskegee Airmen, they're what I consider heroes. And I'm just tickled to death that I have a chance to say something to them, even over the phone. I admire your courage. And I can't say anything else. Thank you very much for everything you've done and for what you continue to do.
Thank you so much for the phone call, gentlemen.
Thank her. I'm grateful to her for her gratitude.
Well, we're lining up here. Let's go to Nora now in Phillips. Nora, you're on Route 51 with the Tuskegee Airmen.
Hi. I just wanted to say how honored I am to hear Mr. Taylor and Mr. Poole speak. I had read, I think years ago, did Eleanor Roosevelt have something to involved in that? I thought that I read somewhere that she had been in Chicago and she knew someone knew one of the airmen, and that's how it got back to her husband, Franklin. Now, that's what I recall. And I've read other things, too. But I wonder if that's true, if they know that.
That was a truth, but it wasn't exactly as you portray it.
Oh.
Eleanor Roosevelt was brought over to visit. The portrayal of the 332nd Fighter Group is what they were doing because they were in North Africa. Hadn't been to combat yet. And when he brought Eleanor Roosevelt, she went back to America the next day and related to her husband the categorical ridiculous situation that existed, sleeping on the ground of white rocks all around the place, everything wrong. And in a less than a month time, we had adequate aircraft for everybody in the group.
Nora, thanks so much for the phone call. And let's go to Jim in Merrill. Jim, you're on Route 51 with the Tuskegee Airmen.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Gentlemen, it's quite an honor to speak with you. One observation I have, and maybe you could kind of address how things were years ago to what I have seen now. You face a lot of inequalities and prejudices through the years, and the thing that strikes me now is I've lived in Milwaukee, Chicago, Cincinnati. I see a lot of people struggling, whether it's suburbia or in the inner cities. A lot of people seem to just not care whether they put some work or effort into trying to make, you can't fix the whole world, but to fix your little corner of it, to do something better, to better yourself, better your situation. It seems like people just not caring. Right? There's a lot of people that just don't care. Is that something that you'd seen years ago?
Of course. We see it now. People like you are aware of the problems that we have, and you would like to see something done about it, so would we. And that's why we're here now, because this is the 70th anniversary of the Tuskegee Airmen, and things have changed quite a lot, but they're not where they should be now. And it takes people like you and people like me to make what changes we can to equalize the burden on everybody.
Jim, thanks so much for the phone call. At the presentation last night at Edgar High School, and I do want to mention again that you folks, both of you, are going to be at the American Legion in Wausau at 7:30 this evening. It is open to the public, but seating is limited. I had a chance to talk to a couple of guys who we've had on this program before. Daryl Mayfield is a Central Wisconsin businessman and a sociology professor. He often comments on racial political issues. And we had Jim Campbell, who's the director of the Never Forgotten Honor Flight Group, which has flown World War II veterans to Washington free of charge so they could see the World War II Memorial and other historic sites. Here's what Daryl Mayfield and Jim Campbell had to say about your appearance last night.
Well, I've been fortunate. This is the second time that I have met some of the, I guess, original or Tuskegee Airmen. And for these men to still be alive, just like many of our World War II veterans, they're getting thin in rank now, they're living legends. To understand what these guys battled against in wanting to serve their country, the United States, as Americans, what they had to go through to be able to do that when things were stacked against them. Understanding that Africans have been fighting in wars, in American wars, since the American Revolutionary War, in which about 5,000 Africans fought. So to see these living legends and to hear their story one more time was quite a benefit to me, to my wife, and to my son, whom I brought with me.
Oh, I was just in awe. I mean, to be able to listen to two gentlemen, 91 and 92 years old, and talk about their experiences with the Tuskegee Airmen like it was yesterday afternoon. Literally yesterday afternoon. Their memories are so vivid. And their sense of humor and talking about something they did that was very, very critical during that conflict. But also said a lot about where we were as a nation back in that time and about how we treated different parts of our society differently, and they sure proved the American public wrong big time.
Well, they helped us all overcome that, didn't they?
They absolutely did.
Well, Jim, you've been doing the Honor Flight program for a couple of years now. It is so important that we listen to and recognize what our World War II vets have to say to us while they're still here.
Absolutely. As I told them both just a minute ago, it is so important. And such a wonderful experience to have students of any age be able to hear about the history of our country from those that made it. Because they won't read this in a book. You can't.
That's Daryl Mayfield, Central Wisconsin businessman, professor of sociology, and Jim Campbell of the Never Forgotten Honor Flight Group. And gentlemen, he's right. You can't read it in a book, can you? Living history is something completely different. And it is such a privilege to have you here this afternoon and to be able to hear your stories as you remembered them. You know, I can't say enough. And judging from the calls we've been getting from folks, they can't say enough either. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We'll be back with more after this.
Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More at umr.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We've got Dr. Welton Taylor and Mr. Virgil Poole, two of the original legendary Tuskegee Airmen. Dr. Taylor, 92 years old, and Mr. Poole is 91, giving us the kind of personal eyewitness history that, boy, it's becoming a rarer and rarer thing from that time period. Gentlemen, what was your impression when you got out of the service and you came back to America, and there it was, segregated America with all of its racial prejudice? What was that like?
Well, it was a similarity of what was transpiring all along, because nine the Tuskegee Airmen went to the O'Hare Field to meet with some of the officials of the airlines, and they frankly told us in as nice and fashion as they could that we aren't ready for you. And 5 years later, Jim Tillman was granted the opportunity to be a commercial captain with United Airlines. But prior to then, none of us had the opportunity for it.
Jim Tillman? Was he the guy who ended up being a weatherman in Chicago?
Yes, okay. Right. He was, but he wasn't a Tuskegee Airman.
No.
But he was that. 5 years after the war was over, he got to prove himself worthy of being a captain. So it shows you, I think, the attitude was prevalent then.
Dr. Taylor, you ended up going back to the University of Illinois. You got a doctorate in microbiology. You work with prestigious French and British scientists. You were also in Champaign, Illinois, which is downstate, during the 50s and 60s. Is that accurate?
Yes, I was down there until 1948. I came out of service in 1945, but I didn't go under the sort of thing that they did coming back from Europe. You have to remember, in First World War, when the black troops came off the ships coming back from France, they met large signs in front of the ship's discharge area saying, "White this way, colored this way."
Did you work
and for... And the same thing happened when they came back as the pilots and crew members that came back from this time.
From World War II.
World War II. They had those big signs, white and colored. And the MPs there were told not to salute black officers after what they did and not to salute white officers that were with black units.
Did you work in the civil rights struggle during the 50s and
60s? Constantly.
And Virgil Poole, you ended up being a cop, and you formed your own private security agency in the Chicago area?
I was the chief of police in Chicago, too. I was chief of Chicago Housing Authority Security and Safety for 10 years and had an opportunity to work my sociology and psychology there because I did my best to destroy the gangs and move them out of high public housing
if
they were active.
I worked in Chicago as a reporter for Fox TV for WFLD, and mm-hmm. I had a chance to see Cabrini Green and the Robert Taylor Holmes firsthand. So you had quite an assignment on your hand.
And I did. That was a deal, but it was, again, an opportunity for me to do what I've been prepared to do.
Let's bring it up to the present time. How do you two react as former military men to comments that have been directed against President Obama, who's our first black commander-in-chief? Sean Hannity says the president never really wanted to kill Osama bin Laden. Newt Gingrich has called him the food stamp president. Donald Trump and others say they have doubts that he was even born in America and is eligible to be president. Do you see an undercurrent of racism still
you
in America?
Better
today.
Bet your bottom dollar on it. A lot of that is absolute racism. And there's two sides of every story. One of them may be right, the other one may be wrong, but they usually are in a mix. What they have done is they have made mountains out of molehills. They have taken false statements and taken out pieces of them and quoted those pieces out of context, which all politicians do. And the only thing that's important to the Republicans right now is to regain the White House. And whatever they have to do, they will do. And this is human nature. You want to be on the top of the heap, not on the bottom of the heap. And they're going to do what they have to do. But I think that the common sense of the American public is going to see that we can't go back to what we had that put us in this position. And the only person that's going to be able to get us out is our current president, because that's his job, and that's what the American people are going to demand of him, in spite of the fact that Congress is at deadlock.
Gentlemen, one of the things you're trying to do is bring your message to young people, and I would be remiss if I didn't play some of the comments of some of the young people who were in that audience last night.
I think it was pretty cool that Mr. Hansen could get the Tuskegee Airmen. It was pretty nice how they could get some time in to come. I think it was pretty cool that some African Americans got to get their name in from the war.
Amazing. Cool.
You think they were heroes?
Yeah.
I thought that was amazing that he could bring in these guys from World War II.
I think it's really cool how the government did really bad things to them and they still succeeded.
I think because of all the racism towards them, that they showed their patriotism and were able to get through that and showed that they were part of this country.
It was very inspiring. It proves that anybody can do anything if they really want to. They did the best that they could, and it definitely changed everything. And thank goodness.
What do you think about the fact that these guys are 92 years old, and this is living history? They're not going to be around to tell these stories that much longer.
I'd actually... kind of saddens me because it feels like it's going to be a part of the history that we're going to be losing.
Dr. Welton Taylor and Virgil Poole, thank you so much for being with us today, and we are plumb out of time. Lena Horne used to perform quite a bit for the Tuskegee Airmen.
Yeah. It was
so why don't we leave you with a little bit of a Stormy Monday. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producers, Crystal Bennis and Jane Ritger. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music by Lena Horne. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, until next week, we're heading out of town.